Welcome back to the Spinner Rack, all you new U maniacs, aka new Unifiles. Unifiles. Here at the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe. We are your hosts,
Steven and
Andy. We're talking about all the books, right? No individual books this time, all of them. Yeah, we gotta like somehow make something seem more exciting. But yeah, geez,
add some sound effects here.
we are 110 weeks of publishing in, 115 weeks of podcasting, and 146 comic books. If you're still listening, thanks, I guess, right?
We appreciate it.
So that's about 3,490 pages. If Stephen can do math, we'll be
It's
recapping basically the 19 to 25 issues, except for Star Brand, which is a little funky. There wasn't really a hard end to the second year's publishing, so we split the last year of books so we'd have two seasons of 7 issues each. And we're just past the second anniversary of the books too, so we'll find out what the third year will bring.
What does the future hold? So, unlike the first year when there was cancellations for half the line, there were many fewer changes to the lineup. So we had although no cancellations, there were also no new series launched, kind of. And there were no annuals at the end of the second year, unlike the first year. And the books continued to diverge significantly from their initial directions. But at this point, it's been a while since we've had changes in creative teams. Things are kind of moving along smoothly comparatively now. A new prestige format book was released. They started with The Pit in the last season, and another one came out in during this time period, and it also gave almost no one a good introduction to the new universe. So after The Pit, when we started this season, there were several physical changes to the line. They went direct market only distribution, they increased the cover price, they expanded the page counts, and went to some sort of what they call Mando offset paper or printing. You'd have to ask a paper expert, I'm sorry.
If it ain't Mando, it ain't great. I don't know.
We don't have outside ads anymore, so we've kind of lost touch of the real world or early video game ads. They do have tighter continuity, more crossovers, big time. And we get continued changes in the greater world that we don't always see in the books, but they're kind of hinted at in like in editorials. So there's stuff going on. And the logo seems to disappear from the cover. It's pretty
Yeah,
small now.
who needs a logo? Direct market also means only sold in comic book stores, right? So if you're not
Yeah,
like
so you have
hardcore comic book
newsstand.
lingo.
Yeah, I shouldn't be too technical. There was the newsstand distribution that had that's where they'd have these weird numbers in the comic books where it's like last issue printed 500,000, sold 50,000, and I don't know, they were supposed to trash the books or something or send them back. The direct market, it started in the early 80s and contributed to a big boom in comics. Independents and the major industry players both saw a big market, a lot of interest in comics, and that's where we get a lot of these 80s, famous titles that really grabbed people.
Until about 1995. But that's a whole nother podcast. Yeah. So yeah, there's sort of a question about what the cover dates we've been using since they all went direct market, direct comic book stores only. Some other New Universe fan pages celebrate like the ship date for books, but we still use the date for when they hit the newsstand or hit the comic book store. As we always have, 3 weeks after they shipped, right? Takes some time to get there.
I don't think they overnighted things back then. Yeah, I was.
No, no Amazon. But yeah, it seems by strange coincidence, at some point we started releasing podcasts for the corresponding books on the exact 36th anniversary of their newsstand dates. So I guess that pressure's on me to keep that going through the next few months. Tuesdays in 1988. Should I set the release date for Tuesday? We could do that.
That then would be off again.
Oh, crap. Never mind.
Somehow, yeah, Friday now is Tuesday 88, so
That I won't try and make sense of that. So
I always thought comics hit the stores in on Fridays, and then later it became Wednesdays, but I don't
yeah.
know.
But
I
yeah.
don't know everything.
Anyway, although it covered the same time frame as season three and had about as many books, starting in season four, these comics were significantly longer, so we started covering them one issue at a time. So it seems like time has passed pretty slowly again, at least in universe time. So today we'll take a quick tour through the continuing books as we prepare for the final run of the new universe.
Yeah, actually, the feeling the time go by at this pace is a little I mean, that's how it was when the books originally came out, so it's kind of fun to live it, see it all in real time, as it were. Since real time is like a aspect to the books, hopefully, you know.
This is true. Sometimes I'm kind of itching to crack open the next one right away, but I have refrained from that.
I've been doing well, but I mean, we're so close to the end, I will still find spoilers and like random things where I'm looking up some other character and not expecting to find anything. And they'll be like, oh, by the way, so and so did such and such. And I'm like, what?
By
When?
the way, this person got turned into road pizza, an issue, something, something. Yeah, I'm basically off the Facebook fan page. Like, I'll look at the pictures, but I don't look at the discussions because invariably someone's mentioning something.
It's you know, we will join those conversations eventually, I guess, but
Yeah, it's too risky.
it's too risky now.
I really have no idea what happens in like the end of any of these books, so I'm trying to keep it that way.
Yeah, I it's funny. Yeah, looking forward to it when we get there.
Yeah.
From phase 3 to phase 4, there's differences, but it's also kind of it felt a little plat like a plateau. Like some of these major changes were already in and up and running, and so it felt like, okay, we've got the one editor. Each book, has a creative force or a creative team, and for most of them, they go from the beginning of this season to, I believe, the end of the publication. So it feels very much less uneven in some ways than the seasons we had before, where there was a big change of gears that it would feel like sometimes, change of characters in a book or the setting or the whole premise. Hi, Justice.
Yeah,
And after I mean, so we ended with the pit and the immediate aftermath in phase 3, and it feels in some ways that a big part of this is moving from a real world as close as they could get to more of like a post-apocalyptic dystopia real world. I don't
why
know.
does everything have to be a post-apocalyptic dystopia?
Could have also been a nice place with a few paranormals in it. I don't know. So it's as we go through this season, we'll describe a little about the books and sort of the quick thumbnail descriptions of them, and just our thoughts on them as a whole, hopefully. More than the specific issues, which we already covered in those specific podcasts. So for during this season, what was our like favorite moments? Do you have a couple?
Oh man, do I have to have a couple? No,
Say,
I'm good.
I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know.
I can start. So DP723, which is billed as DP7 versus Psi-Force in the boot camp battleground. But that was that issue where it actually had like a three-part story, like the most DP7 thing ever to cram like every single character into the book, because it handled like the people in the military base. It was the first formation of the CIA superpowered lady squad when they were like training and fighting each other. And then the DD teens wrestling in the basement. So like that, I think that was one of my top moments for sure. Like I'm an unabashed fan of the all lady assassin squad or whatever they're gonna turn them into. and this one was
They
before
attack the
Stephanie
president
even
of
joined.
Slovakia. What? Eh, what?
Right. I'm sure he had it coming or something. But yeah, even to the point, I don't think at this point it's been published yet, but that was the first one that had like the panel of, they're all like talking in the bedroom and like all the ladies are blow drying their hair and stuff. So I used that one for the cover image for the DP7 issues from there on.
Oh, it's up there with the Jenny Swenson in prison issue
Right?
Spitfire.
That was definitely one of my favorites.
I had a couple of favorite moments in DP7. I liked Jeff and sort of versus his dream of like his family's strapped to a bomb and
All right,
he's
yeah.
running to save them. He gets fat and then he overcomes it and like carries on. I found that very touching. Also very touching was maybe the issue after last one where that like renegade antibody who like Randy was always so all
He's
right,
kind of
murderer,
mean
gonna murder
too,
some more.
yeah.
Ends up like sacrificing himself, and the way he kind of goes back to this like silly kid who sort of adopted him, that's like a very cute moment. I don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely. That was a strong one. And you could easily say like most of the DP7 issues as like good moments, but or they're
Yeah,
all good,
I
I
was like.
suppose.
I should narrow this down because otherwise it'll be DP7 moment after moment.
I also really like Justice 21. That was the first one where like he had been captured by the police and they drugged him up and he was hallucinating himself back into like the Winterlands and like reliving like the princess dying and that kind of stuff. Like I think they did a nice job of kind of like blending that concept. Maybe it was actually even a little bit stronger in 22, where he's really like seeing all the different like imagery and kind of stuff. He thinks he's fighting the demons, but it's really just all these groups that are after him. Like those two issues, 21, 22, they kind of gave me best of both worlds and reminded me how much I liked the fantasy stuff.
Yeah, that's it was nice to see the fantasy stuff again, and this sort of angle on it was interesting. I was thinking for Justice, I'm not sure I loved it at the time, but the when the final resolution with the Justice Brigade and he sort of goes home to his daughter and is like just in a dark room like it was good for him. I don't know. He
They
has a
should have
bit of a
mirrored those like Ken Connell panels. Like there was a couple issues in a row before Byrne ruined the character where he would just like sit there in his room in the dark looking
yeah.
downtrodden.
That's right. The end of the annual, I remember, was had like a great panel of that. You can't let this be the end. That was the end of that story.
Yeah. Wonder whatever happened to the
Yeah,
skier.
that's I don't think that's yeah, that's come up yet, but when we hit that on Twitter, I will try to remember that. Who's got the sat room of sadness best
Solid.
so let's see. Let's take a look at Psi-Force 19 to 25, and we have like little introductory text paragraphs for each of these books, and I was tempted to like drag out the ones from like the beginning of the season to the end just to look at the changes, but
Michael, who's that?
the way we ended up with the Psi-Force text was: a group of psychic teenage paranormal runaways, bound together by a psychic entity called the Psi-Hawk, now reunited and on the run from both sides of the Cold War, they couldn't elude the draft by hiding in Canada, and it cost one of them her life. What?
Yeah, as it turns out, the United States is the deadlier side of the Cold War.
This is probably true,
Right.
yeah. We
Presuming
had
that the whole squad survives that Rostov battle, which I'm assuming they haven't just killed every character and maybe just Psy-Hawk has gone away, but.
it's I wouldn't put anything past it on past him on it. So yeah, we've said it before. For me, Psi-Force is one book that I never read before,
Okay.
and Andy had never read it either. So in most ways, it is the one that's the most comes to us the freshest.
Except the Stasi death was spoiled by the Facebook fan page.
I almost didn't believe it would actually happen. I mean, where is this coming from? How could that happen? Yeah, I don't know. The previous season we had the change of creative team where Fabian Nicieza joined as writer. Ron Lim came on as penciler. And he stayed through, I don't know, about half of this season. Did really nice work. I think the art has been generally good for Psi-Force.
Yeah,
Start
Lim did
with
up to 22.
the dream episode. It was sort of early in his career, like a lot of the creators on in the new universe, and felt like he really, took it and ran with it. I think in the later issues, he probably was already starting to get courted away by other books because he goes over to, I think, Silver Surfer around now. Maybe another book. He seems like he could do a couple of a month if he pushed himself. But yeah, the writing consistent, and I gotta say, Nicieza apparently came in with a plan. He doesn't just sort of noodle around and like, it felt like he had something planned out from first issue he was on, and they've just been sort of marching through that.
Yeah.
So let's see, we started in issue 19 after the pit, which honestly Psi-Force didn't take a lot of interest in. They're sort of out on the West Coast, and what's going on in Pittsburgh? I don't know. What is going on in
Who
Pittsburgh?
cares? Well, they're running for their lives and they had their own little pitch, right? The sanctuary. Kaboom.
The sanctuary blew up the issue before, I guess, what would have been the pit tie-in. So they were all on the run. Half of them didn't know what happened to the other half, and they were split up, one going north and one going south. So let's see. 19, we had Thomas, Stassi, and Kathy fighting this new group of paranormal mercenaries.
Yeah, international paranormal mercenaries.
Yeah, it was very like Claremonti and X-Men of like everyone's got a different national origin and an
Yeah.
accent. Bonjour, and all that.
I'm still hoping that Thunderhead comes back so you can do his voice again.
My dime store Schwarzenegger
Well, it's
whatever.
like a perfect what was the Simpsons version of Schwarzenegger? McBain? No, that was the
Veneer Wolf
character.
Castle.
Yeah, Wolf. But yeah,
Brilliant.
McBain,
Thank you. Too kind. So they headed out with the Medusa web in San Diego around a small downtown, and were ultimately captured.
and we were worried that they were killed too.
Possibly, yeah, one or two of them looked pretty bad shape. Kathy had been shot several times. After we switched back to Wayne and Lindsay Falman in Victoria, British Columbia in issue 20, who I guess Tyrone was kind of flying in and out to visit them. That took an issue to using Lindsay's power to sort of figure out what was happened to Sanctuary. That Rodstvow was the guy who was kind of coming after them this whole time.
Yeah, it was sort of
Then
the big reveal of like, all right, how did, because they just cut it off, right? Like we saw the explosion, and then all of a sudden, we pick up with Wayne in a cast, right? And like
yeah, we
they
had
never
no
explained
idea
it.
what how they'd even gotten out of that exploding house. Why they like didn't know each other was still alive or whatever. So a lot of sort of filling in the background on that. And then we're up to speed, and Wayne is attacked by the Spitfire Max armor, which we didn't we had seen the covers a while before, but because there was a one of these backup stories, we got a little bit more of why and who was in the Max armor. It was not Jenny Swenson. It was our old buddy Jake Travist, the paranoid schizophrenic.
Who's gotten a little bit crazier under Nicias's writing?
Even Mac Browning was like, you can't put this guy in the armor. He's a crazy person.
He doesn't even keep his killing just to civilians.
Yeah, it ended up with Travist under arrest by Canadian authorities.
Let
We
them
may
deal with
still see
him.
more of him. I don't know. 22, we found out what had happened to Thomas, who was sort of isolated and had been forcibly inscripted into the US Army. He was getting like a mental evaluation by our old buddy Keith Remsen, aka Nightmask, and pretty much the whole issue was a sort of Twin Peaks dream thing that's full of clues to Thomas's background, his family, weird family growing up, struggles. A lot of it was very I would say creative. It's a lot of symbolism of his family being rich but cold, like a sibling who died, all this kind of sadness.
Yeah, I think I remember you liked it, but I didn't.
Yeah, you know, that another moment was just like these the clouds like kept kind of forming Stassi's face.
Yeah.
For him, that was another moment I liked a lot.
But
Andy's
we
pretty
also
hard
got
to
had those
impress.
cool, they had cool Psi-Force dream uniforms that we haven't seen, like if those will ever exist yet.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I love those. They're a cool enough to be, exciting, but they're not like costumes as much as a lot of superhero outfits would look like. So it kind of walks the line there, and I think that would be great if we saw more of them. Let's see, That was followed up with a fight with DP7 crossover, as everyone is at this boot camp, and Wayne and Lindsay and Tyrone come down to bust Thomas out, whether he likes it or not. There's what was it, Dance Party 7? I was just listening to
Yeah.
that the other day. The cover for that was maybe like oversold it, perhaps it because it was a Paul Ryan cover, and you know, or like I don't know, everyone's like running around dancing, maybe. It was a sort of more straightforward fisticuffs, we'll call it. We had
It was kind of like it was the lesser of those two, like the two matching issues where we saw Psi-Force perspective versus DP7, and the Psi-Force one was weaker by far. We were trying to figure out what the heck was going on and why.
It's a little funny. A couple of the crossovers, yeah, were not just sort of one thing leading into the other, but almost like restatements. So DP7 redid their Psi-Force cover or crossover, and they redid their draft parts, which I love Paul Ryan's art, so great, but it's a curious way of approaching the stories. I don't know. Let's see. That was pretty straightforward. So they told Thomas that they were going to also grab Kathy and Stassi, and they knew where she what they were. So, which 24 we have finally. The team is reunited and then immediately breaks into the CIA. So it's Thomas and Kathy and Stassi and, excuse me, Wayne, Tyrone, and Lindsay. But once they break into the CIA, I forget the rest of the book. I just stopped reading.
Nothing happened.
No. Rojdestvo had apparently been there already, and everyone was super trigger happy. So, in a twist of irony, Stassi was killed not by Rojdestvo, but by the army shooting them up again.
Yeah, Skipper gets blown up too.
Skipper was probably torched by Rojdestvo. He was like a mess, but you kind of we only heard his narration boxes, so we don't really know
Yeah,
if there's much left there.
but I like that twist because, all season like two or something, I was like, where's Skipper? Shouldn't he be helping these kids like he said he was going to? But then I guess he was bitter because Colby Shaw of the Sanctuary was his ex or forgotten
Yeah.
love, and he blamed them for her death, or I don't know. He never helped. He was trying to hunt them down for a minute, and then he, got turned into a, I don't know, a walking scar or something. We never actually see him yet.
It also happened during a conversation with I was not Proudhawk, the other guy, Derek Shining Star,
Right. He
the
was definitely
rogue.
dead.
Yeah, we think he's dead, so I mean, I guess there's resolution to that whole like first arc of this series. We had after that was the issue 24. We followed up, and I was kind of glad we did the big Rojdestvo Psyhawk throwdown, which just wrecked Washington, D.C. Good, top power paranormals just slugging it out. The Psyhawk didn't always use all the powers available to it, and was formed using Lindsay, not Stassi, so it was unable to bring itself back to life.
But it did give us a flash look at Rojdestvo's tragic past,
Yeah,
where he
thanks, Lindsay.
accidentally, when he got his powers, nuked his wife and then his kids.
Yeah, I mean it's a sad story, but I, thinking forward, I can only think that it's, there'll be something in if there's a final confrontation with Rod Stroud later, that somehow, Lindsay's power will be determinative. I can't quite imagine how,
Yeah, it'd be a stretch. I'm thinking
but.
more of like the Russians and the Americans, like Psi-Force, maybe Medusa Webb and the Russians need to kind of team up to eliminate him because he's so much of a threat or something like that. That's my guess.
It also sounds good.
Could be way wrong. I know they flashed the Siberian Project enough times that they're definitely going to do something with them. So,
Yeah. Definitely something coming with there. So, we do have, yeah. So let's take a look at that. What worked with all of this?
I would say, like, beyond Andrew Chaser, who I'm not super fond of, like all the new characters were pretty cool, right? So, I don't like all of the Medusa Webb characters, but I think not because they're bad characters, more just because they did bad things to the characters I like, right? Which is probably what you want in a villain kind of thing. So yeah, like the Medusa Webb, the new characters, the people we got to see in action, the changed. Particularly Kathy's like super badass now kind of thing. And so that's pretty fun. Like her changing from grossed out by her powers, rich valley girl to like hardcore, I'm gonna drop a wall on you is kind of fun.
Yeah, she has changed a lot. Her arc has been considerable. Yeah, that I was joking about them a while back that like we've gone from the Breakfast Club to I don't know what they're running around taking on the CIA and the army and the world's most powerful paranormal mano a mano.
Right. Though it doesn't generally work out well for them.
It is but yeah, it's we've gone from like a John Hughes movie to like pure action, yeah. So the story goes very quickly. The characters have been pretty consistent during all of this, but evolving. That's cool. They have this was the teenager book, and so with only a within just a year or two, it's like they've graduated and now are out there on their own. It's I guess it's a bit like the last Harry Potter couple of movies, maybe. I don't know. The war has come to them, so the writing, like I say, is keeps the pace up, and yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. We see like a bigger world around. I mean, Medusa Webb is, let's say at the very at best they're morally gray. I mean, they seem to work both sides of the street, as someone
Yeah,
said.
kind of whoever pays to a degree.
So while they're not, not good guys, you can sort of get them on your side. So that's also kind of a nice, like mature, realistic storytelling element. Was there a problem? I hated killing Stassi. That was pointless.
Yeah. I didn't
And
like
not.
that. Honestly, any of the draft stuff doesn't really work well for me, I don't think. Like, I didn't like Thomas in the military, becoming more cold and, honestly, the night mask stuff, although that's kind of been woven throughout the books, night mask is kind of turned into a turd.
He's a narc. I'll just tell you right now.
Exactly.
Lieutenant Narc.
There's no real low points, or I wouldn't say there's any major like narrative problems. Yeah, I don't really like the death either. I think they could have pulled something a little more like, injured or a coma, like what they did with Stephanie, kind of put somebody out of action for a while, like a realistic injury, It's like, oh, well, it's going to take maybe 8 months to recover from this spinal injury,
Right. I mean, Stassi was really invested in using her gift to help people. And so even though she was like being overworked by at the hospital where they sort of had them prisoner, I could also imagine her being like, no, I'm not going, they need me here. You guys can like be the five,
Right.
like you dropped Michael, you can drop Stassi. In a safe place. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe
I
don't
don't know.
invade the CIA.
Yeah. So, okay. I think a lot of the, let's see. So where it was going
So there
was.
was basically like the team broke up, right? So adventures out and abroad, heading towards them reforming, I guess, right? Like that was kind of the arc. Will they get back together?
Yeah, I thought that yeah, they were kind of headed towards this ultimate showdown with Rodstvow, and now they've done that.
And they
So
lost.
it surprisingly went badly, yeah. So that's what I had seen going. So again, it's the most mysterious book for me. If I didn't have to like get the Marvel Age comments and occasionally look at covers. I really have no idea where any of this was headed. For us as just naive readers, we don't have a idea of what's coming next with this series, but there is an oracle that we can consult.
Wait, the Batman character?
Magic 8-Ball, answer hazy, try again later. Now the Marvel Age Annual number 4. I had totally forgotten about this until quite recently, actually. And while I check the Marvel Ages as they're coming out along with the series, this is the time of year when the annuals come out. And they give some insight into what the creative team has planned for the year. Sometimes it's spoilery, sometimes not. Sometimes they don't know what they're talking about. But the Psi-Force one I did take a look at from Marvel Age Annual number 4, which is a got a nice Art Adams cover. Check it out if you can. And there's nice shots of DP7 and Psi-Force, a nice Ron Lim Psi-Force that I didn't see in the book. Psi-Force, they give a bit of a indication where this is going. So
Come on,
fast
man, out
forward.
with it. You got me on the
Okay.
edge of my office
Can
chair.
I drag it out a little longer?
This
So we'll see the
is on page 12, which is after page 11.
So it says it actually starts off with issue 25 being the big fight with Rodstvow. Only one survives. Okay. After that, issue 26 focuses on Andrew Chaser, a reporter who has to decide if he's going to publish a book he's written on the Psi-Force members now that everyone in the United States believes them to be dead. They'll wake up in issue 27.
Okay.
But they'll wake up in the Siberian Project in Russia.
Oh,
Ooh.
dang.
They'll be there for about 4 issues and they'll encounter Krasnaya Soldatsi, which is basically a Russian equivalent of the Avengers. So Psi-Force will be recruited by the Medusa Web and just, no, sorry. Psi-Force will be rescued
Ah.
by the Medusa Web and Justice, which will lead to a final battle with Rodstrow. So,
kind of spoilery, I guess.
I guess I expected a fight with Rodstvow again at some point, but I didn't want to over. So, then they say from there on, it'll be a question of how they're going to react and interact now that World War III has started to break out in pockets around the world. Their decision is to start fighting, but they're not going to be taking sides either. They're anti-American, anti-Russian, anti-war, period. It'll be them against the world. A couple of members will leave to be replaced by a couple of new members.
Oh, late in the game, new members. Interesting.
Yeah, well. Or is our book being canceled? Look, we're out of here. Wayne, you've been saying that for 30 issues.
Sorry, your whole universe is being canceled, so.
So I don't know what the connective tissue is to some of that, but
Yeah,
yeah,
that'd be an
the
interesting question. Like, how the heck do they end up in Siberia if they're like passed out?
in
In
CIA
DC,
headquarters.
yeah.
Yeah. So
That's cool. A little teaser of things to come. It definitely sounds interesting.
yeah.
I was questioning if we were going to get Justice v. Rodstval. Maybe this is a step closer to that.
Yeah, the Justice Rodstvow, Psyhawk, I guess, and Starbrand power levels have always been like, oh, he's the most powerful weapon in the universe. No, he's the most powerful weapon in the universe. So yeah, it was if I guess we've seen Psyhawk versus Rodstvow, so it was time to match up some of these other top characters.
Yeah, but Star Baby and Starbrand seems to be just doing whatever, so.
Yeah, it's not really sure that's a character so much as a plot device. Anyway, so overall thoughts anymore?
Psyforce in the past was always a little up and down. Like, it definitely took a while. I mean, the very, very early beginnings, it was. Like, I like the premise, but like occasionally you get some bad issues with some, questionable writers and that kind of stuff. I'm not a huge fan of keeping them apart for seven issues. Like, it works. It's a reasonable story. There's no fault there. But like, we never really got them all back together under Missy Ezza doing stuff, which is a little disappointing. I would say, yeah, it's kind of a B for me. It's like an average B. Not B plus, but B.
I would, yeah, it's in the B plus range for me. So I'm probably, I'd say about the same, but a little higher. I have enjoyed specific issues pretty well. Missy Ezza gives me a feeling of someone who really, when he got a chance, he was like, I will throw everything at this title,
Yeah.
So it's sort of fun to watch. It certainly has an energy to it that is enjoyable. I do miss parts of the old Psyforce, but the real-time aspect does kind of push things forward.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I would say like I like 19 a lot, where we finally got back with Thomas and them, and like 2021 were kind of set up-y to kind of position Wayne and the rest to kind of bring them back together. And then there was the run in the middle. I just really didn't enjoy that much. I didn't care for the Dream one. The Boot Camp Battleground was pretty rough, and the art was pretty funky. And then I didn't like the Stasi death issue either, and it all kind of came back together in like a pretty enjoyable 25, but that kind of dampened my love of the series a little bit, where it had been trending up and then I think it kind of trended back down a little bit for me at least.
Yeah, there's a character death is like a cheap shock a lot of times to kind of juice things, and in comic books, yeah, kind of the premise of the new universe is that characters aren't just dying and coming back a month later. So,
Yeah, and it felt a little contrived. Like, oh, well, I have to heal this person. Wait, heal yourself first. No, I also have to heal this person. Wait, heal yourself first. No, I also have to. She died.
Yeah, the well, it wasn't flawless by any means, but they have a Michael wasn't bad, but like switching him out and sort of speeding things up wasn't a bad decision either. I kind of wonder if it's an editorial thing of like, we got to start killing some characters to juice interest in the books,
Yeah.
possible.
They definitely had a run of crossover, right? It's you got the Max Armor, followed by Night Mask, followed by DP7. So they were
That's
doing that part.
yeah, that's fun to see. It doesn't break always break down this easily, but I'm looking back and I'm thinking a lot of things have sort of a three issue little mini arcs in several of the books. So it'll be
Yeah.
I'm sort of seeing that in a common pattern, which is probably a good, yeah. That's about as long as you want to drag things out, especially if a book is, floundering in sales. You don't want to be, well, I'll keep them from getting together for, most of the year. Yeah, don't do that, dude. No, don't. I know.
They're still not Psi-Force.
They are not. Let's get the cool jackets. We'll try to find out wherever Indigo got those ones for the Black Powers. So far, those are the best uniforms in
Take
the.
the one off of her corpse and restitch it.
Ouch.
Right, should we switch it up to Justice?
Take a look at our main man, Justice.
All right, Justice 19 to 25, our super awesome intro blurb. John Tenson is a paranormal who wields the sword and shield of justice. He brings his black and white fight against evil to paranormals who misuse their powers. Or does he? He also sometimes wears a cowboy hat. Trace
Entirely
from
brave
Razzle
for
wouldn't
me.
be caught dead in that cowboy hat, is all I'm saying.
Your duties here are no longer required, Mr. Trace. You may pick up your last check and get out of here.
But yeah, we've come a long way since Trace at Razzle. And of course, yeah, season three covered the dream retcon, and so our 19 issue, was really after the pit, where Justice is kind of walking around judging people. Like, he's kind of on a new-ish sort of mission, to kind of, basically just hunting paranormals who are misusing their powers. Issue 19, he comes across the Savior, who runs his own cult, which was actually a pretty fun issue. I just especially remember like the background characters of these like everyday like husbands and wives and stuff, like rounding up to join the Savior.
What was the woman was always carrying a broom or something? Was
Yeah,
that
I think the women had like brooms and rolling pins and stuff, like very housewifey weaponry. But I guess they let them go, because yeah, so Justice killed the Savior, and then that group, who watched him, kill their leader, then ended up becoming the Justice Brigade later on. So yeah, it's kind of fun that they tied together. Issue 20 was that weird guy Seraph, and there was the paranormal with the big ears at the Pit Aid concert.
Dumbo, my main man,
Yeah,
Dumbo.
and Seraph was like a weird opposite Justice. Like, he was trying to protect paranormals, but then they ended up fighting.
Call me Injustice. Wait, no, that sucks.
That doesn't sound good.
Unjustice. No.
Yeah, and his
Only.
powers were pretty vague until they finally explained them in one of like the backup pieces. But yeah, Justice ended up, running into his daughter, and he was kind of following her around through some of these issues a little bit and paying her student loans. But then at the Pit Aid concert after the fight with Seraph, who the police just let go, he Justice gets captured by the cops.
Very suspicious.
Yeah.
It was a pretty violent. Yeah, the Justice had been publicized as the Justice Killer in national news, and so these cops were taking no chances, and they got a chance to get him down. They went like full on beating him down with the nightsticks,
Oh yeah, that's right.
dog
And he was
pile.
protecting his daughter from getting trampled, so he couldn't use his shield to protect himself. And then they Rodney Kinged the guy, so
No.
nobody caught it on tape though. So cops go scot-free. Also worth mentioning, this is like Purple Trenchcoat Justice. So the perhaps short-lived costume, because as we went on, it seems to have disappeared in favor of a more normal outfit when he's not dressed up as a cowboy. But yeah, 22, that's where, oh, I'm sorry, 21, that's where he's trapped. They have sort of all these groups talking about, trying to track him down. Colonel Mac Browning wants him, right? The NSC does. The police have him, but he hallucinates and escapes the police, which leads into the next issue where he's like hallucinating the Winterlands, which we mentioned earlier, which I thought was pretty cool. That we finally figured out what was up with that weird cover on issue 22, where he's like around the corner from some horrible mutant alien thing saying, "Daughters, are you?" But the power of love prevailed, I think, or something like that. And like she talked him out of it. And like,
Gotta say, collecting the new universe, which we had to do before we started looking at them. Just looking at these covers were sometimes so like, what the heck?
yeah.
And then even after we'd started reading, it was, how do we get to there? What could possibly? So yeah, there's a lot of fun covers, and that was one of the more eye-grabbing ones, I gotta say.
Yeah. I think funny too that like I guess Justice kind of had it right, because in mid issue 22 when he's hallucinating, he's fighting these government guys who just look like the hounds, but then he's also Mac Browning's there, who gets like his shirt blown off and like the fireman's calendar fantasy world or something. Only
I
his
got
shirt
a
gets
dance
damaged.
party down at Fort Benning with the Psi-Force I got to get to,
Yeah,
so
but then like so Justice hallucinates Mac Browning as like Daedalus, the most evil man in all the lands, and Justice can tell who's the bad guy, so I think he's got had that one pretty well figured out. And those funny moments where the homeless dudes were just putting stuff in their burn barrel all episode, all issue. Until they probably off themselves by burning a bunch of live ammunition. That was a good one.
off screen.
Off screen, yes.
Yeah, I just it occurs to me that like Mac Browning is sort of played as a like a government, straight government military guy. If he became like a super villain, like how big a stretch would that be? It'd
Yeah.
be like, yeah, we showed him shooting civilians a couple of issues there, so are you really that surprised? I don't know.
It'd be kind of an interesting turn if he went like anti-paranormal, So like he was trying to lead a squad of regular, Navy SEALs or something, like to take out paranormals, kind of outside of the legal system. It's kind of stealing Justice's job, but like not only bad people.
We'll start with the bad people and then we'll work our way back around. I mean, nothing, nothing.
Technically, they're all civilians, so he shouldn't have any problem killing them.
It's true.
Except for the ones that got drafted, I guess.
Listening to our episode, we had talked a little about like who was originally like real and who was like a fantasy character in the original run, I guess, the
Right.
Daedalus sequence. And we both sort of agreed that there were some that were definitely real, Becky Chambers and Arnie. We like met them in the real world. And there were some that were probably real, which was like Daedalus's cohorts and
Yeah, like
son and
Tattoo and Damon and all that, yeah.
even the hounds were probably like real people who'd been sucked into Daedalus's dream. I realized the most questionable ones were the ones who were in the Springlands, the
Yeah.
king and the queen. Like, why would he create them? But why would he turn people into them either?
Right.
So, yeah, maybe that's like where you get like either complete fantasy and it's all in Justice's mind, or
Yeah. I
I don't
mean, I
know.
guess it could be like, I mean, if Justice is in the real world, but he's fantasizing everything, maybe the Springlands people were just like a rival gang to a degree almost. Like maybe like, you know, we've had the story told where there's like the bad guys who are but are still kind of have a moral code, and then the, you know, the chaotic, do whatever, you know, much more evil and reckless bad guys kind of come in to kind of wipe them out. So, I mean, it could have been something like that. I
That's
still miss
clever.
the Justice Bros, though. I think they were a fun one-off.
Yeah, they
I call them the Justice Bros, but it's just like the regular Justice Warriors who were totally useless compared to Tenzin, who was really the only one who was any good.
When they say Tenzin's the best of them, you can sort of imagine like a end game of that original series where he is becomes like, yeah, the I don't know, the trainer or like the guy who's the old Jedi master who has to like take the new kids and train them up in the ways of the Justice Warrior,
Yeah.
again, didn't go that way, so.
It did not. But yeah, 23, that's where, you know, Justice finally kind of meets up with the Justice Brigade, who had essentially decided to go, you know, on Justice's mission, but with flamethrowers and maybe a little more willy-nilly. So they were actually kind of fun. But yeah, a lot of people kind of getting burned up. They had kind of, you know, they were goofy a little bit at first, but then, you know, like pretty much dead serious. So, you know, he tells them to, you know, cease to exist, and they take him literally and immolate themselves, basically. Which I think kind of starts the path of Justice for the rest of it. So, like, he's like, okay, maybe black and white doesn't work, kind of thing. And you know, sometimes you gotta put on some blue jeans, belt buckle, and move out west to find yourself a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, this is where we start sort of seeing what maybe Peter David has in mind, which is the sort of moral, adding a moral dilemma dimension to this that we hadn't considered already. That he is thinking of he needs to be show mercy as well as justice, and so there's I mean, that's a good way for a society to work. I'm not sure we will.
Society, eh.
Can you make that the basis of an adventure comic that comes out frequently?
Yeah.
That's the difficulty, I suppose.
Yeah. But we already had that too, to a degree, right? And like that was kind of part of his problem in the fantasy realm too, is like, you know, like if he's just black and white, using his power, kill the bad guys, that's it. You know, emotionless, then he's okay. But when he starts like getting invested in it and fighting for vengeance and for causes, and that's when he starts to get into trouble and powers the evil machinations of the things that I guess weren't real, but still kind of makes me sad a little bit. And then I think, we've had that kind of backstory of his daughter following along, also finding out that she has a paranormal power, but we still don't quite know what that is. And then 25, I think, kind of transitions it into the next round, where some assassin named Quill, like this kind of odd guy on the cover of 25, glasses, is hired by some mysterious person to assassinate him for mysterious reasons. And it doesn't go well. And oh shoot, what's the funky dude's name? The guy who's kind of falling apart and
Creeping Crud.
running. Creeping Crud, yeah. Creeping Crud loses his head. Again, like adding ammunition to Justice's sad mindset, I guess, or kind of piling on him a little bit. But yeah, that's kind of where we leave off. Like, Justice again sort of feeling like things aren't going right. Like he made a bad call and not following his mission. Not investigating the paranormal Quill in the airport when he saw him. So, we'll see.
Yeah, Quill looks a bit like Blowout. Like when I first saw that character design, I was a little like,
Blowout, is that a character that I'm supposed to remember that maybe was an important part of some story that we should have seen again? Like, I don't know. It doesn't it rings a bell, but
And he's interesting in being a paranormal assassin, but not like using his paranormality to kill people that we know of. He's like a guy with a sniper rifle, but I guess his whatever he's got like lets him get away. Maybe that's the trick. So yeah, as we were sort of saying about these like mini arcs, this is in this for this book, yeah, we kind of looked like we'd started in a new one there, and we don't know where it's going. Justice versus the Savior, and then versus Seraph, and then the two where he's hallucinating, and then so yeah, those all kind of wrap themselves up. Angela, we thought maybe her friend Kleenex had been killed, but he seems to be alive. I mean, that was like a little touching when Kleenex appeared to have been killed by the Psyhawk Rostvow big showdown. Creeping Crud, we barely knew the guy, so
I don't know. I felt more bad for Creeping Crud. Kleenex is kind of annoying, so I was like, if he dies, I don't really care.
Angela really does, I don't know, kind of tamp down the excitement around justice.
She's the Lindsay Fellman of this book. Short-haired, young woman who doesn't really do anything interesting.
if Lindsay had joined Justice and was his like romantic partner, now that would be interesting. I'm a little old for you, Lindsay. Oh, don't say that. I can read your aura from here too. And
She would be a
anyway,
good team up with him, though, because then he could track down like anybody.
yeah, I'm. That's my guess is like she can track down Rodstvow, which would at least help them fight him, but which is she better or worse than Playback? Probably better.
I like Playback.
You like Playback?
Yeah,
Okay.
she's more fun. She's a little quirky. She's afraid of justice, which is the right thing to be, probably.
Justice does a lot of like glowering, and the dynamic between him and his boss, semi-boss Terrence Updike. It's a little like Updike doesn't really have much of a hold over him, so
Right.
he recruited him, but Justice is always kind of doing just whatever he wants anyway. So I don't know. Maybe Updike talked him out of the costume because it seems like since he got on the government payroll, he's been dressing just normally.
Yeah, I think the letters page talked him out of the costume because I was with most of the letter writers thinking like, eh, I mean, the purple doesn't make much sense. It just looks too much like a superhero.
Yeah, he.
Especially if you're trying to hide from the police.
Yeah, if you're like Nationwide Manhunt for Justice Killer, he looks like this and dresses like this. And if
This
you look and
bright
dress
younger
exactly like
guy
that,
with
yeah.
younger guy with white hair, bright purple trench coat, no matter what the weather, and lightning bolt shirt, might be able to spot that guy, maybe.
Stranger things have happened. So it worked. Most of it was it's solid work. It feels a little like it's slowing down more than it was before somehow.
I feel like it started slow. I mean, maybe, blending. And we've been kind of just talking about good and bad, but I remember when we were first reading through these and he was just kind of wandering the countryside and his daughter was around, like it's like, okay, where is this going? Like, is this something going to happen here? It didn't really start to pick up until he really kind of joined the NSC, I guess, like really that Justice Brigade issue where they all died. Like that was kind of where I think it was starting to pick up, but then they kind of jumped to another random paranormal adventure with the Western one, which I didn't really like. So yeah, I think it kind of started aimless a little bit, picked up and had some interesting bits, but yeah, it took a while to kind of figure out like what they were trying to do with it, I guess, as a reader, I think.
Yeah, for me, I'd say that it always feels like solid, but it doesn't have that sort of what I was saying for Nicieza, that like I'm gonna just throw everything into here. I will try anything to get this book off the ground. So while the arc that they seem to be putting him on is reasonable. It's not super exciting.
Yeah, he might be
So
playing it a little too long form, perhaps.
that's, yeah, it's like if you were guaranteed a year's worth of issues, okay, then yeah, stretch it out, take your time,
Yeah.
throw in a fill-in issue.
And we know
If
this
you're
guy loves this character too, because Peter David has like continued to use like Tennyson as inspiration for a character in Spider-Man 2099 and like inspiration for a character in some kind of book series thing, so
Yeah, I think I don't know. I guess I'll get curious enough to check those out some days, but it always sounds like, justice in name only, but
yeah.
still, yeah, I did have fondness for it. And there's some, he had started with Mark Hazard as well, so he's been in the involved with the new universe all along, so.
Yeah. I think there's still just a little bit of afterglow from that Mark Hazard issue too, coloring my love for Peter David.
Yeah, it's a his attempts at humor I noticed sometimes fall quite flat. Sometimes they are amusing, but he's got as someone said, a early Joss Whedon vibe to him where
Right.
okay, you don't need the quip every page. You can just
I mean, the
let the
Joss Whedon style kind of turned into the MCU style anyway, right? Yeah.
I mean
Because
the
Joss Whedon writing it, but then, action plus jokes all the time is
yeah,
pretty
I
much
mean
every Disney
it's
show, so.
I mean That show was successful, but like the cultural impact of it was bigger than I'd ever imagined at the time. Yeah. Like every show had like multi arc, episode arcs after that. Everything had the quippy guy, the innocent girl, the whatever,
At
beat
least
everyone
until
up.
everyone moved on to start ripping off Lost.
There you go. So what got
We
where's it
kind of know where
going?
it's going. We kind of talked about where it was going. We kind of talked about where it's going now, we presume, right? Like, that we've got a new big bad, perhaps. Whoever
Yeah,
says Quill.
Quill and or his master could be, yeah, a significant players. So we only saw, yeah, just a couple of them, but actually yeah, sky's the limit to where that can go. So and then we've got suggestions that there'll be more crossovers in the future. Nightmask was just saying, I've got to find the justice. I've got
All right.
Psi Force is apparently going to see him at some point. So
I
what is this
guess my
deeply set?
guess now is that it's just going to be a little bouncing around and aimless for the next couple issues and never really get to a point.
We did have a crossover with DP7, did we?
Did we?
Yeah, well, Charlie and was like investigating the Justice Killer or something.
Right. That was just in DP7, though, right?
It was no, it was Injustice. Yeah.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah, that was like the last season, so
Eons ago.
I can consult the Oracle of Marvel Age again. Justice will be interacting more with the universe as a as the draft and the upcoming World War III occur, Peter said, working with the National Security Council. But problem is, Justice is going to begin severely questioning the morality of what he's been doing. He had created this entire scenario for himself where he had a mission that had been given to him by God to judge paranormals. And we'll have to deal with more of the horror of what he's done. And this mental construct will begin to crumble as he interacts with his daughter, Angela. And Angela's also paranormal. And it'll reveal what her power is. And wouldn't it be interesting if she doesn't use it wisely? So,
Winning at scratch tickets. That's her power.
have you used this correctly? It's not getting her bills paid at Temple University or whatever.
Yeah, fair.
Chances are it could be just, yeah, jumping around for a while or not giving us a sense of building. As
Yeah.
so
That sounds a little bit like that's what we're in for. And that seems like, judging from, these 7 issues, it would kind of make sense. I don't know. If we get a final throwdown with Rostov, I'll be happy, but
ooh, that would be nice. Well, let's see. Should I have a overall rating for this?
yeah, you got something in mind?
Trouble is, yeah, we've got it's probably B, but on the like B minus. I'm generally happy with it and enjoying it, but the sense of urgency isn't there.
Yeah,
Not the fire under.
I struggle with this one too, because it really has kind of jumped around a bit. Like, if I think hard about it, like, is there really just, 2 or 3 issues that I really kind of liked? Whereas Psi-Force, like, the middle was a little bit of a downer for me. Like, here the middle was a little stronger, so it kind of started low, got a little better, and then kind of, I don't know. Like, the Western one was kind of fun, but it was kind of stupid. So I'll go with you on this one. Let's put a rung lower at a B minus. Like, it's super readable. Everybody should check it out. But it's not blowing the doors off.
Yeah, I don't regret any time with Justice, but you never quite know what Justice is going to come in if he's this mysterious, powerful force of nature, or he's kind of we'll focus on the goofy characters around him for a while. Do do
Yeah.
do do. But yeah, it's let's call it good for that, and let's take a quick break. I think, or maybe we'll just break this into two episodes.
To be continued.
Two. Check back with us whenever it appears that we have a new addition to this, I guess. And we will see you next time.
We'll try to not make it a four-parter.
Oh no. We've got to move on to the rest of the books one of these days.
One of these days.